It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike sets up a board of four authorities. You furnish the questions and our experts try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will reward you with $10 in war stamps. If the question is muffed, you get a total of a $50 war bond, plus the 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information, Please, as you know, is a catch-as-catch-can and completely informal program. And tonight, the catch-as-catch-canners include our regulars, John Kieran, Franklin P. Adams, and Oscar Levant, and as our guest, the well-known foreign correspondent, author of People Under Hitler, Mr. Wallace R. Jewell. Now, for our first question, gentlemen, the entire freshman English class of Umpqua School, Bridgeport, Connecticut, has ganged up. Frank, do you know that school?
Well, Timmy does.
Timmy is Mr. Adams' one of Mr. Adams' many, many sons. At any rate, the English class as a whole asks you the following questions. Who asked these questions? The first is, where are you going and what do you wish? Mr. Adams.
The old moon asked those three.
That's
we are
right.
Going to fish for the herringfish. And I hate to see them miss that encyclopedia they needed.
Yes. The old moon asked what three?
Blinken and Blinken and Anon.
Those are the ones. That's right. All right. Now, who asked this question? The Thane of Fife had a wife. Where is she now? Who asked that question?
Bridgeport High.
Bridgeport knows the answer. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that is in a scene in which I believe Macduff is one. I think maybe Macduff asks it himself.
No. No, it's in the sleepwalking scene, and Lady Macbeth asks it
that's
of herself.
Right. Sorry.
She's remembering back. That's all right, Mr. Kieran. That's apt to happen even to Mr. Kieran. That's one wrong. How about this? Lord, is the time come for me to blow? Mr. Levant.
That's in Connolly's play, Green Pastures.
Who asks the question?
Well, Gabriel with
the
horn.
Gabriel is the one, yes. He's asking the Lord. Oh, it's time for him to blow his horn. Mr. Adams, that's right, isn't it?
I'm afraid it's right, but I was going to say I don't know because those boys need that encyclopedia.
I'm awful sorry. You did get 2 out of 3, and we invite the freshman English class of Umpqua School, Bridgeport, Connecticut, to send another one. Maybe they'll have better luck next time. Mrs. Margaret Paul of New York sends this one in. Get 2 out of 3. Who recently forecast a new phase of the war with the following phrases? The first phrase is, we can see the ridge ahead now. Mr. Jewell.
Churchill.
Churchill, yes. How recently was that?
It was within the past 10 days or 2 weeks.
Yes, about May 16th it was. And whom was he addressing, do you remember? What kind of group? Mr. Levant?
It was not the Sunday address. It was after that, 2 days, I think, after the Sunday address. I think it was when he was on to answer questions. What did they call it?
He was addressing a group of war workers and farmers at
Leeds. Right. He appeared without notice. That's
yes.
Right.
6 days after the Sunday address.
More or less. We can see the ridge ahead now, said Winston Churchill. Now, who said this? The tide is turning. The tide is turning. And it wasn't Winston Churchill, though it's the same idea. Well, how about guesses on that? Mr. Dool, Levant?
Well, I don't want to say Wallace. That would be wrong.
Vice President Wallace?
Yeah.
No.
It would be wrong. I told you that.
Say, you're getting pretty good at this. It was Queen Wilhelmina of Holland in a broadcast over Radio Orange. She went on to say, every hammer blow in the ever-extending factories and workshops of Great Britain and the United States brings the tide nearer. And who said, over the hump? Mr. Levant.
Donald Nelson.
Donald Nelson, yes, in a speech on April 17th. We're over the hump on war production. Very good. That gives us 2 out of 3.
Do you know where that comes from?
No.
That's a railroad term.
What does it mean?
Well, in the freight yards, they have what is known as a hump. where they push the cars up to a certain place, and then they break them, and they uncouple them and let them slide down, and they split them out in various tracks, depending upon where those separate cars are to be built. So when you get it up there, it's all downhill after that.
That's a very good image.
Why don't you send that question in, John?
Now, gentlemen, see if we can stick you on this. This comes from Mary Smith of Brooklyn, New York. Where in literature or song do you find these phrases? All of them deal with weariness. Get 2 out of 3. The first phrase is, weary and worn. Weary and worn, Mr. Adams.
I think that's from the Song of the Shirt.
It is indeed. Quite right.
With fingers weary and worn.
Yes, and with what after the fingers, remember? With eyelids?
Something in red.
Heavy. Heavy in red. Who wrote the Song of the Shirt?
Thomas A. Hood.
Thomas A. Hood is a very good. And how about this? Weary of days and hours. Mr. Kieran.
That is from Proserpine by Algernon Charles Swinburne.
Yes, that's right. Can you give us a line or two?
Days and grief and flowers and everything but sleep. I've forgotten. I'd have to start the whole thing to get it right. Never mind that.
Oh, that's bad. Not on this program, no. I'm sure you could give us the whole thing, Mr. Kieran. And one more weary, which is weary and ill at ease. Weary and ill at ease, Mr. Adams?
That's from The Lost Chord by Adelaide Ann Proctor.
Very good. Seated one day at the organ, I was weary and ill at ease. Well, that gives us 3 wearies out of 3. And sends
my
a song
fingers
to...
idly.
You're losing your audience, Mr. Adams. From Robert E. Bousquet, Jr. of Medford, Massachusetts. In what recent news events did these ships have a part? Get 2 out of 3. The first ship is Potrero del Llano. Del Llano, Mr. Levant?
Well, that's one of the Caribbean or the Brazilian affairs. No?
Make up your mind. You say Caribbean, what do you mean?
In that area or in the Brazilian area. The Bulge, they call it, off Brazil.
Who owned the ship? What country?
Well, I mean, why should I be an authority on that?
I don't know. We're trying to prove that you're not. Who did own the ship? What country? Mr. Duell, care to guess at that?
I guess Mexico.
That's right. Why didn't you come in before, Mr. Duell? Yes. It was the first Mexican ship sunk by the Germans, and it may be instrumental in bringing them into war. Guess I have to call that wrong. How about this? The Nagasaki Maru. Nagasaki Maru, Mr. Duell.
It was a Japanese ship that was lost apparently owing to a mine disaster, and the captain later committed harakiri in the NYK offices in Tokyo when he got back.
Yes, that's an action of which we thoroughly approve. Quite right. The Blakely, Mr. Duell.
An American destroyer that was torpedoed just off Martinique and then went into Martinique for 1 day, or was it 2 days, and then was escorted further to a port where it could stay longer, and a second attack was made on it just before it made the second port, but it failed to score any hits.
Yes, great story. Mr.
That's the Caribbean I was talking about.
Oh, that's the one. Thought we'd get around to you, Mr. Levant. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, how about this from Robert B. Blum of New York City? Gentlemen, you're going to hear several tunes whistled for you, 3. Now, all of those who are listening have heard Art Gentry as a singer, but I do not think that we have yet heard him as is it called a siffleur, Mr. Kieran?
Siffleur.
This is his big opportunity.
James now, McNeil Whistler, as they call him.
We haven't got his mother here. In each case, the whistling should suggest to you a play in which a murder is committed. Give us the name of the play. Okay, Mr. Adams? All right, Mr. Gentry, go ahead. Whistle. Mr. Levant.
What is that a whistling? I think that's Night Must Fall.
It is. Night Must Fall. Remember the situation?
Certainly do. It was either Emlyn Williams or Robert Montgomery, depending whether you saw the play or the picture, and he got in very well with a very old lady. He charmed her, and later on he carried a hat box around.
Yeah.
And either Rosalind Russell or whoever you saw in the play.
Not in the box.
A secretary.
Yeah.
Well, they were kind of outguessing each other. Anyway, he whistles that. That reveals it later on.
Boy, can you tell a story? Yes, that's quite right.
Must have been more to it.
Well, Mr. Levant is quite right. It's from Night Must Fall, and of course, Mr. Gentry was whistling what tune?
Mighty Like a Rose.
Mighty Like a Rose, and you think there's nothing to it, eh? Mr. Gentry, show him. Let's have the next one.
I know that one. bet on it. Ladies in retirement.
That's very good, Mr.
And I'm not a Gilbert and Sullivan man either.
Get that, Mr. Adams?
You ain't even a Sullivan man.
Some ladies in retirement, yes. And if we had 20 minutes or so, I'd ask you to tell us a story.
I can garble it in three.
Pardon?
I can garble it and confuse it in three.
Let's have the third. Don't the rest of you fellows ever...
Yeah, we know what it is, but...
Oh, I bet you know what it is, but what... In what play did it occur? Mr. Kieran, tell us what it is. I'm going to have Mr.
It's
Levan
in
tell
the me. Hall of the Mountain King.
From what?
In the Peer Gynt suite.
Yes, you're mispronouncing that terribly.
Well, of course.
Peer Gynt.
Well, all
you're
right.
You're Norwegian. Mr. Levan.
That was in a picture called M, in which Peter Lorre charmed children.
That's
to their death,
very nice.
As a matter of fact.
To their deaths, yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Gentry. A nice bit of, what would you call it? Sifflement. How about this? And now Mr. Cross wonders if you remember Abraham Lincoln's classic answer when asked how long a man's legs should be.
Well, Lincoln supposedly replied, long enough to reach the ground. That's just common sense. And you know, the same good common sense must govern the answer to this question. How good is a cigarette? The answer is simply, a cigarette is as good as the tobacco from which it's made. The better the tobacco, the better the cigarette. That's why at market after market, year after year, we pay whatever it costs to get the finer, lighter, milder leaf. For example, in Ahoskie, North Carolina, at auctions of the 1939 crop, the American Tobacco Company paid 32% more for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 32% above the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. And that crop, properly aged, mellowed, and blended with other fine crops, is in the Luckies you buy today. Mr. Fadiman, every smoker knows that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. So aren't these facts worth acting on?
You've shown us reason enough, Mr. Cross, and in just 59 seconds. And now a question from Ben H. Lipson of Astoria, Long Island. Why are the Germans under the Third Reich, under is right, interested in the tuminous coal? Mr. Duell.
Well, they use it to make various synthetic products, principally fuel oil and artificial rubber, Buna.
They make that out of lignite and bituminous coal?
That and limestone. The two
and, yes, and lime. They make gasoline out of it?
I believe there is a process for that, yes.
And is it successful, do you know? I hope you can
yes.
say no. It is. I answer Ben.
They make coffee probably, too, out of it.
Well, they do make chocolate bars out of it.
Out of what?
Bituminous coal.
Lignite.
Really? Have you ever tasted them?
No.
I eat it all the time.
How about this? What are they... Why should they be interested in hydrogen peroxide?
They want to keep their Arianism yellow, I guess.
Ah, that's very good. And that's exactly right, too.
Is it?
Yeah.
It is right?
Sure.
That's good.
Sure, it makes them look blonde.
Saxon.
More or less, yeah. Even if they weren't blonde to begin with, as a good many Germans are not, of course, peroxide makes them look blonde. Was there a great increase when those race laws were passed, Mr. Duell, in the sale of hydrogen peroxide?
There was. I got it out of Mr. Duell's book.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Do you generally carry Adams around as your hatchet man, Mr. Duell? How about this? Why should the Germans be interested in freckles? Freckles. Mr. Duell.
There's a learned professor by the name of Hans F.K. Günther, who was one of the leading Nazi exponents of Nordicism, who has written a great many books on the subject, and he says that freckles are a proof of Nordic blood.
Not really.
Yes, really. That and red beards.
Freckles and red beards. Oscar.
Yeah?
I think I see a freckle or two on Mr. Levant.
I think I ought to commit suicide.
Thank you very much, Mr. Duell. That's quite right. How about this from Mrs. Bertram Chilcutt of Bristol, New Hampshire? Identify these serenades. Now, in the first case, a man helps a rival serenade a girl. What serenade is that, Mr. Kieran?
Well, you mean he sing?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was...
He helps his rival serenade a girl.
Well, in Serenade de Bergerac.
Yeah, well, that's the one I was thinking of.
Well, he doesn't sing, though.
He doesn't sing, but he talks.
He speaks for his rival in the darkness.
That's right. He talks a good serenade.
And frequently in verse.
Yes, and in very good
verse. Entirely in verse.
Mr. Levant?
I knew that from Johnny Eager. Atlanta Turner doesn't like... Robert Taylor doesn't like Lana Turner on account of that reference.
Really?
Yeah, he thinks she's literary. Now you can answer that one.
Well, we have our own Winchell on this program. Here's another serenade. One member of the animal kingdom serenades another. Mr. Curran.
That's the owl and the pussycat.
That's the owl and the pussycat, yes.
The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar.
How does it go on?
Oh, lovely pussy.
Oh, lovely pussy.
Oh, Mr. Adams, let's have that. How does it go?
Pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are.
Thank you. The third and last serenade. A serenade conveys a secret message to a lady. Identify that one.
The lady mixes me up.
The lady?
What's a lady? I don't know what a lady is.
Lady? It is hard to explain it to you, Mr. Levant. How about
it? Do it again, the question.
I'll say the same thing. A serenade conveys a secret message to a lady, Mr. Curran.
Isn't that in there? Barbara Saville?
I don't think so. Or if it is, I don't know about it. Mr. Levant, is it?
I don't hear the question right.
A serenade
conveys... Why don't you give up?
I think he gives up, as a matter of fact. It's from The Lady Vanishes. A troubadour serenades the lady
that's
in the
right.
Got it now, Mr. Levant?
Yeah, but I mean, that's a very cryptic way of putting it.
How would you have put it if you were off?
I wouldn't have put it at all.
Horrible idea. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this? From Dolce Grossmeyer of Los Angeles, California. Where would you have to be, gentlemen, to attend the weddings that are described in each of these musical selections that you're now going to hear? Get 2 out of 3. Let's have the first, Mr. Kahn.
Is that by Grieg?
Go ahead.
Well, that's easy. That's Trollhagen.
Yeah? Where would that be? What country?
Wherever Grieg used to hang out, which was in Norway.
Yes, yes. Grieg was in Norway, and that's quite right. Trollhagen, I suppose, is a town or village in Norway. How about the second, Mr. Kahn? Mr. Curran?
It would be in Athens, attending the marriage of the Duke and Hippolyta in A Midsummer Night's Dream.
That's perfect, yes. And, of course, the composition was by...
Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn is quite right, Mr. Curran. All right, how about this? Now, what's so funny about that?
Suggest Mr. Adams to me.
Mr. Adams?
Well, what wedding is this?
A wedding, more or less.
For a great many years, anybody's wedding.
Yes, yes. Don't make it sound so drear. Not
so
great many years.
That's from Robin Hood, am I right?
You're right.
Well, then.
No, it is not from Robin Hood. It was interpolated in Robin Hood.
It's by De Koven.
Yes, it is in Robin Hood. Isn't it in Robin Hood?
Yes, but it's not by Harry B. Smith.
It's a graceless way of being wrong that he's uttering now. It's in Robin Hood.
Now, what I want to know is where would this wedding take place?
In England.
Some
Mary Wood or something.
Which wood?
Sherwood.
Sherwood.
Robert Sherwood.
No.
Yeah.
No, Sherwood Forest.
That's not true.
Mr. Adams?
Not true. It was interpolated in that song. Had nothing to do with the with Robin Hood at all.
I'm wrong. I'm sorry.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know anything about it, except it's by De Koven. It was in Sherwood Forest, and then it was in Robin Hood. Other than that, I don't know anything.
He makes it sound convincing, Mr. Adams, that you may be right.
It is not true.
What would you do with him, Mr. Levant?
Mr. Adams is right. Otherwise, I'll get killed.
How about this, gentlemen? This is from Yue Mao of Cambridge. And from the name, I should imagine that a Chinese is sending this in. We salute him, and we salute his great nation. Now, gentlemen, where in literature or the movies are these animal nicknames used for the heroine? The first is Monkey Face. We get more endearing as we go on. We'll start with Monkey Face. Mr. Levant.
That was with Joan Fontaine.
Yes, that's right. In what picture?
Oh, Cary Grant. Hitchcock's picture.
Yes, that's right.
What's the name of it?
Suspicion.
That's right.
Suspicion. Mr. Duell?
That's all suspicion.
Oh, all right. How about this? Turtle dove. Turtle dove. A term of endearment used for the heroine. Mr.
If you precede it with a W.C. Fields rhythm, it would be W.C. Fields.
It is. I can't do it. Can you do it? How does he say it?
No, I'm not a good actor.
Say, I'm not good.
Say, you've got everything in a nutshell there, boy.
There's a critic in the audience.
It's W.C. Fields. I believe he called Mae West his turtle dove, which is certainly a... What's the opposite of an exaggeration?
Understatement.
Understatement, yes. Now, how about this? Ladybird. Who calls who a ladybird as a term of endearment?
You must have been drunk.
Well, it's this is a classical reference.
Yes, that's right. I know it.
How about it,
Mr. Jerry? It doesn't come to mind. I'm sorry.
Well, it's in Romeo and Juliet. And
oh, yes, the nurse.
The nurse.
The nurse calls Juliet ladybird.
That's right. What lamb, what ladybird? God forbid, where's this girl? What act, what scene do you suppose, Mr. Kieran?
Well, it's probably around the second act.
Well, very near the second act, first act. let's see. We did get 2 out of 3 on that. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out no $50 war bonds and no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, before we go on to the next question, Mr. Cross has something to say about a gentleman of great importance at this season of the year, that complete angler, Isaac Walton.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I merely want to point out that Isaac Walton could never have written his famous treatise about fishing if he himself hadn't been an expert fisherman. And for words of wisdom about smoking, too, you'd do well to listen to the experts, the independent tobacco buyers, auctioneers, and warehouse men. These experts spend their lives buying, selling, and handling tobacco. And at markets all over the South, they see just who buys what tobacco. Yes, yes, of Lucky's consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. Smokers, you know that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. You know that better tobacco means a better smoke. So why not profit by the experience and knowledge of the independent tobacco experts, which is summed up in this simple statement of fact. With men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Now we'll go on with a question from Joseph Winkelbauer of Los Angeles. This is a military question, gentlemen. What unit in the Air Force corresponds to a company in the infantry? What's it called in the Air Force, Mr. Adams?
Squadron.
No, that would be wrong. I'm sorry. Mr. Kieran, what would you have said?
I would say a flight.
A flight would have been right. If you had been just 2 seconds ahead of Mr. Adams, we would have got that right. A flight, yes. Is a squadron larger than a flight, Mr. Kieran?
Well, I'm trying to think of a... No, I think it's smaller. A wing is a larger unit.
A wing is much larger,
wing,
yes.
Wing, squadron, and... wing, flight, and squadron is the way down.
I think that's the way it goes, Mr. Kieran. Thank you. Now, what unit in the artillery corresponds to the company in the infantry? What's it called in the artillery? Mr. Kieran?
Well, we have a battalion of artillery, and one above that is a brigade.
All I want to know is, what do you call it?
Well, a battery is the...
What is your answer? Just give me one word.
The smallest unit is
no,
a battery.
I want the unit that corresponds to an infantry company.
I'd call it a battery.
Well, that's what I would call it, that's all. I just had to give you a little more self-confidence. A battery is absolutely right. It's called a battery. Now, suppose you're in the tank division. What corresponds to the infantry company in the tank division? Mr. Adams, you could get this one.
No, sir.
I bet you could. The answer is
company.
No, company is right.
Company?
Yes, it's called a company in the tank division also. Well, we got 2 wrong on that. That sends a $50 war bond to Mr. Winkelbauer. We got the Air Force wrong, and we got the tank division wrong. $50 to Mr. Winkelbauer in the form of a war bond and a set of the Britannica. And a question now from Sarah Wellinger of Dorchester, Massachusetts. This is about proposals of marriage, gentlemen. Who proposed with these words? Here's the first. And you ain't ever to marry anybody but me. Never, never, and forever, will you? Who proposed that way? Mr. Adams? Sort of have a feeling you know this, Mr. Adams. How about a guess, Mr. Adams?
Is that senile, rustic type of his period?
I think he's getting back at you, Mr. Adams. It's Tom Sawyer proposing to Becky Thatcher. In what book, Mr. Adams?
Gone with the Wind.
Tom Sawyer.
Yeah. All right, see if you can do better on this proposal. I promise, Mary, if you'll have me, I shall devote myself for the rest of my days to trying to do what is right, as God gives me the power to see what is right. Mr. Kieran.
Sounds like Abraham Lincoln.
It is Abraham Lincoln proposing to whom?
Mary Todd.
To Mary Todd, yes. Those words are used in Robert Sherwood's famous play, Blinkin' in Illinois. Now, here's the third and last proposal. So, thrice fair lady, stand I even so, as doubtful whether what I see be true, until confirmed, signed, ratified by you. Mr. Kieran.
Bassanio and the Merchant of Venice.
That's right. Proposing to whom?
Portia.
Yes, he had to wait a couple of acts before he got it.
That's where the act ends, on that couplet.
I think it does, Mr. Is that how you can tell when an act ends? By the rhyme words at the end. Tell that to Mr. Levant. It's an easy way. That gives us 2 out of 3. How about this? This comes from Sulo Uxa of Hudson, Massachusetts. What's meant by each of these terms? Great Britain means what? Now, we have to be very exact in our definitions. Great Britain includes what, Mr. Kieran?
It includes Wales, England, Scotland, and some of the islands. Small islands, not Ireland.
Ah, that's very good, Mr. Kieran. That's exactly right. I forgot all about the little islands.
Oh,
that's,
yes, they're in Great Britain.
Mr. LeBan?
Well, I can name some of those islands, but that would be specious.
How about this? The British Empire includes what? The British Empire. Now, this is not an easy question to answer. Mr. Levant, don't...
Well, I would defer if someone with more dignity would take it.
Well, not on this program. Mr. Kieran?
Well, if nobody else wants it, I would say it would include Great Britain and India.
India.
And whether it now includes the Commonwealth, like Canada and Australia and South Africa, I do not know.
It doesn't.
It does. Cool?
It does not.
It doesn't.
Does not?
No.
It includes British Guiana.
Includes Crown Colonies.
It includes the Crown Colonies, yes. England, Wales, Scotland. Does it include Northern Ireland, Mr. Toole?
Yes.
Yes. The Irish Free State, India, the Dominions, colonies, protectorates, and dependencies.
What about Egypt?
What position does Egypt, Mr. Dewell, occupy in the empire?
I think it's a protectorate.
I think it is a protectorate, yes. How about the British Commonwealth of Nations? What does that include? That's a tough one, Mr. Levant.
That includes the one we just negated, like Canada, Australia,
South Africa.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah?
Well, I should,
Yes, that's quite right. And sometimes India. I think we did all right on that one. How about this from Ruth Coleman of Baltimore? On what side of what war did each of these characters fight? Captain Horatio Hornblower fought on what side and what war, Mr. Adams?
On the side of the British.
Yes, in what war?
In the war of...
Haven't made any mistakes so far.
The war that Nelson was in.
Yes, the Napoleonic Wars, yeah. Right. How about this one? Grisha Ilyich Paprotkin, Mr. Levant.
The Russo-German War in 1914-15.
Yes, and he 16. Was what nationality?
The case of Sergeant Grisha by Zweig, Arnold.
Right, Zweig, yes.
He was Russian.
He was a Russian, yes. You might have got that from my accent. How about this? Patroclus. Patroclus?
Who?
Patroclus, Mr. Kieran.
He fought on the Greek side. He was the great friend of Achilles in the Trojan War.
On the Trojan War, yes. Whom was
about
he slain?
1100 B.C., what?
Whom was he slain by?
He was slain by the chief fellow of the Trojans,
Against
the brother
eight.
Of Paris.
Hector. Is right, yes. Well, that's about all. Now, this evening... Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out one $50 war bond and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Mr. Dewell, for coming to our party tonight. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be here, and our guests will be, first, the critic and composer, Deems Taylor, and as our special guest, the distinguished actress of the screen, recently starred with Bob Hope in My Favorite Blonde, Miss Madeline Carroll. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. Remember, for every question answered correctly, the sender gets $10 in war stamps, and for every question that stumps our board, you get a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, plus a $50 war bond. As for those bonds, if you can't win 'em, buy 'em. Invest in your future.